Members will call a meeting of the Agriculture, Rural Economies, Veterans Affairs Finance Committee to order, and the clerk will take the roll.
Representative Junkie?
Here.
Representative Welty? Representative Finstad? Representative Doty?
Here.
Representative Faust?
Here.
Representative Hamilton?
Here.
Representative Hansen? Representative Heidgerken? Representative Magnus? Representative Olin?
Here.
Representative Otremba? Representative Peterson? Representative Hoppe?
Here.
Representative Schmansky?
Here.
Representative Hoppe moves the minutes of February 13th. They're in your folder. Any questions, discussions? Hearing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Minutes are adopted. All right. We're going to, if you look at your agendas, members, there's a little discrepancy. We're going to start off where we left off last committee, which is with the ethanol producer payments, and go over those, that section of the budget. And then we'll move into the rest of the agenda. We have the dairy and food division, pest and fertilizer, plant protection, rent, if we get that far on the building. And again, if we do not get that far, all these things will just continue to roll forward to the next committee hearings until we get through the entire overview, and then we'll probably move into Veterans Affairs after that. So as we prepare for our bill, looks like beginning of April. So with that, who do we have for the Ernest? Mr. Ernest is here, I believe. Oh, also, maybe we'll start with this while you're getting comfortable up there. There's also coffee for the audience and members. Cell phone's off. Reminder, buck if it goes off, $5 if you answer it. Jim Reinholtz has put in your folder today some information. Members, as we're going through the budget, we made the request of the department, and frankly, Commissioner Hugeson thought it was a good idea, too, that we put some additional eyes on some of the budget items that weren't really spelled out in your budget book. So you might want to tuck these in your budget book when you're done. I'm going to let him explain it, but basically, there's always a category in your budget books that says other operating expenses. Well, you know, as someone who with oversight, this committee oversight of budgets, it's kind of neat and interesting and wonderful to discover what those other things are. And so as we go through the different budgets, you know, hopefully you'll be able to refer to this. But I'll let let Jim explain what he stuck in there and how you can work with it.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Members, you should have in your today's handout two reports that I ran to give you an explanation of what type of information is available on agency budgets. And if you would just take the two page one first, I'll use that one. The question, as Chairman Junkie said, came up during the presentation before: what kind of expenditures are included in the category that's in the budget book called other operating expenses? So I ran this report that shows what kind of information I can provide you, or the department also could. And if you're looking at the first page on this two-page report, you see the second grouping really is called, the object category is called other operating expenses. That is the same term that is used in the budget book that shows at the agency level, but less detail. This now brings that detail out. The total will be the same, but what you'd see is, it answers the question, what does other operating expenses include? It includes those items, 12 or 15 items that are listed there. They're pretty much self-explanatory by title. I ran this showing the base and the governor's rec for the 2 years in the columns. So just for example, you can see the first one, the governor is spending in 2008 recommending $6,234,000 for rental of space. I just want you to know this is the type of information, the detail I can get you, the department obviously can get you. The trick is obviously is trying to say, so what's the right amount to spend or what does this mean? And if you see something in one of these reports or that are you getting and you have questions on, either ask me or the department directly, I referred to that one. That one is at the agency level, and I'll go to the second report. It also can be ran at what we call lower levels down. This report then takes that same information, takes it at the Department of Ag, and then breaks it down into the major programs at the Department of Ag, and then breaks it down into those categories of expenditure. Once again, this matches up exactly with the pages in the budget book, just at that next level down. So you can look through that one. That becomes longer because there's the four different programs in the Ag Department, the major programs in the budget book. Same thing, it breaks it into the smaller categories, and that, like, once again, I'll say, if you have questions, look at this. If you have questions on anything particular, ask me or ask the department. We'll get you further information on it.
Thank you for that. And again, members, it's just some more detail, and certainly in any one of these categories, we can, you know, if you want to know supplies, what does that mean? Is that, you know, coffee for the floor, or is that paper? Is it pens? Is it, what is it? We can certainly get that. I'm not going to say that we're going to nitpick this apart, because we're certainly not, and I assume most things are very legitimate, but it does help to have a little set of eyes. For example, one of the things we might ask the department on as we go forward, in the past few years, Representative De La Forest and I have had a little gnat in our eye on printing. Many times when you go to committees, you'll see these full-color handouts come to committee members from departments. And one has to wonder what the cost of that is compared to what we do, like this, just black and white good information that we can get. Is it really necessary, and what's the cost on full-color handouts for committee or legislative meetings? You know, it's one thing if you're going to a show and promoting, you want to have the right materials there, but in a lot of committees we've seen, you know, full-color printing, and all of us, I believe, understand the difference in cost there, as we have all ordered printing and utilized it ourselves, probably in our campaigns and other things. So, you know, there's some things that may come to mind, and as we go through the divisional budgets and look at these things, or as we're putting the bill together, and you're looking for money. You know, frankly, eventually we're going to have a target set for us, and we're going to try and put together a budget, and perhaps there's some items within the detail here that we can move around or put some instructions forward that would free up some dollars for something else we want. So just another tool for you to use in the budgeting process, and hopefully that will be helpful. Mr. Ernest. Thank you, and welcome to the committee. Yesterday we had the commissioner here and had a very good discussion, I think, on Next Gen, but then we stopped and we were going to talk about the producer payments and where we're at on those and what's budgeted for them over the next few years, and maybe you can talk about that program and maybe a little history, too, on where we're at and where we're going as far as when they were cut. Now they're being, I believe, reinstated. Talk about the different levels and any detail you can provide in that realm.
Sure. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Steve Ernest, Fiscal Management Director at the Department of Agriculture. One thing I would point out on the two-pager that you just got there, you would see down at the bottom of the page, toward the bottom of the page under local assistance, the object category, object code 5GO, aid to non-governmental organizations. That is mostly, that's your ethanol payments right there. Almost all of that on that line.
And if you'd also then reference us to pages in the book when we're going through these budgets, too,
yep.
for you and other members that are going to testify or division people.
The ethanol producer payments are the main program under the value-added agricultural products section, so that starts on page 45. Of the budget book. And I'll just mention that last year we did have a little money for the pump grants under this section too, that we gave that out to 51 stations, and we also have $100,000 a year in the base for ethanol efficiency grants. If you look at page 46, At the top of the page, you'll see the base appropriation of $15,268,000.
And Mr. Ernst, excuse me, maybe if the pages could turn on our overhead works now, and you're sitting right in front of it, turn on his computer monitor there, turn on the overhead, and when you're saying the top of page 46, I think you'll be able to lay that down and you can point to it, and it'd be a little easier for us to follow the numbers. Big time technology now, members in this committee. It'll take a few minutes to warm up.
Okay, sure.
And to the department, you can keep that in mind, too. You can bring overhead materials. You can now plug in PowerPoints, which are helpful sometimes on some of this stuff. Especially, I would say, a lot of the marketing, Minnesota Grown, some of that might be inducive to a little more display rather than it can get pretty dry just going through these budget books, so we're looking for any distraction we can get here. There we go. Now you can zoom that so it's bigger too, so that we can see it. Zoom and focus. There we go. Isn't it a wonderful thing? It's not blinking. You don't have to blink your eyes every 2 minutes.
Oh, that looks more in focus to you than it does on this screen.
That looks good.
Well, this is the page that lists the base appropriation there at the top of the page, 15,268, and 100,000, I was just saying, of that goes for the ethanol efficiency grants that we give to research ethanol's effects on fuel system materials and energy efficiency. But then the main part of that, the $15.168 million, is the producer payments. And I brought some extra copies of a sheet that I gave you after I was here a couple times ago. But this, I don't know if they have the copies of that. If you don't,
copies are coming, members.
They were handed out before, but I probably they didn't stay with the books. So you'll see in 07 and then going forward in 08 is the 15.168 there. And then the next line down shows how much of that we use for our regular payments. That's for the current production. And you see that the program regular payments end in 2010. So there's zeros on that line after that. And then the deficiency payments, I can go over the history of those a little bit. But we had some money left over in 06 and we expect we'll have left over in 07 this biennium, because what happened was we planned for the Gopher State Plant to be in there and then they weren't. So we gave that money out in deficiency payments. And then in 08, we'll start making the 20-cent payments again. So that's why that regular line looks like it goes up, even though the production is about the same. We have a couple plants in 08 that will get, I believe, one quarter of payments, and then they'll be graduated from the program. And then in 09 and 010, the rest of them come off. In 010, there are just a couple plants in there.
Again, Mr. Ernst, can you go back a little further and actually explain, there's a lot of new members on this committee, what was the basis of the payments, when did they start, what was the, how were they calculated, how did those original plants receive their payments, when did they receive them during the year, et cetera. Can you just really give us an overview of that program?
Sure. It's a 10-year payment program, so the first plants came in I don't have that back on my sheet here all the way, but it would have been 1990, I believe, or 89. There might have been some that started. We did 20 cents per gallon right from the start. That was written in the statute. They send us quarterly reports audited by CPA firms of their production, and we give them quarterly checks for 20 cents per gallon of their the production that we've we've accepted into the program. Some plants build more production after that, but there's a cap on how much a plant can apply, can have in the program, so they can only get $3 million a year total.
So it was 20 cents per gallon up to 15 million gallons per year to get to that 3 million times how many plants were on that original program?
At one time we had 12, I believe, the highest number was. Now, we were paying 20 cents per gallon, and then in fiscal year 03, we had the budget crisis, so at a certain point in the year, and I don't remember the actual date, the governor unallotted that money to put off paying it to them. So there was a large amount, and I'm not sure if I have the actual amount of that number from that year in here. It was a fairly large amount in 03 because of the unallotment. Then in for the 04-05 biennium, the law was, the appropriation law was actually written to say, okay, we'll only pay them 13 cents on the gallon now, and we'll pay the next 7 cents when we have money freed up, like we did with the Gopher State plant not there, or if another plant just closed down for some other reason. We did the same when we wrote the law 2 years ago, saying we'll pay 13 cents per gallon, and the rest we'll just keep track of as deficiencies. We don't plan to put that provision in the appropriation this year. When you get the bill, you'll see it doesn't say the 13 cents, so the 20 cents is referenced in the actual statute. We'll pay 20 cents. The 15.168 million will be enough to cover the 20 cents for the production that's there, and then as the plants graduate from the program, we can start really kicking in, making the deficiency payments, as you see on the bars there, using most of the appropriation in 2010, all of it in 11 and all of it in 12, and just $765,000 in 2013 to finally pay off all those deficiencies.
So, members, just to review, again, this was the initial program that we started back when we went basically to the 10-cent mandate, and we were getting plants up and running to fulfill that. There was some cash flow problems at the time with this new technology, and we offered this producer payment, which was kind of the first of its kind in the country, quite frankly, along with the mandate. And again, it was 20 cents per gallon up to 15 million gallons per year. Most of those plants now have expanded well beyond that, but they continue the state commitment for 10 years to receive this. I believe, wasn't the total dollar amount over the 10 years about, what, $350 million we talked about? So I think right in there. So, you know, members, it was a substantial investment, but when you look at the current figures the department puts out, is it's a $2.8 billion annual industry that we created with a $350 million one-time investment, basically. And I think that's pretty good talking points when you visit with folks out in your districts and around and at meetings, because people always ask about that. And the second thing they ask is, well, we're subsidizing the plants. Again, this was for the original dozen plants or so. The new plants do not get this anymore, as you're probably aware. But if you're not, that's something to tell people. Our new Generation 2 plants, the one in Granite Falls, the one in Atwater, and others that are being built, and I believe there's 4 or 5 under construction right now, they don't get this anymore because they are able to cash flow, and they are self-sufficient as far as the new plants go. So, and again, this is going to be part of our discussion as we look forward. There's as plants come off, and how many have come off now, Mr. Ernst? Do you know which ones are off?
Yes.
And if you don't, I'd ask our researchers over there to perk up, and if they can help us.
Chippewa Valley Ethanol came off in 2006.
Well, that's one in Benson.
Corn Plus.
Winnebago.
Core Ethanol, I think that one might have been renamed. I don't have the last year they had payments on here, but Gopher State, obviously, and Minnesota Corn Processors,
We're there yet. And Winthrop?
Winthrop.
So Winthrop, Winnebago, Benson, and St. Paul, obviously, that one closed down.
Actually, Winthrop is Heartland, and they'll come off in 08.
Okay.
And then Bingham Lake, Ethanol 2000, will come off in 08 also.
Okay. So again, as these plants are coming off, members, you know, it took an awful lot to get this payment program up and running, and we're going to see these dollars now, if not utilized in Department of Agriculture, they would fall back into the general fund. And I think it's a sense of everyone around this table and certainly a lot of other folks in legislature, particularly from rural areas. And I might add, I think people like Mr. Hansen and others from the metro area, that we want to maybe look at ways we can capture these dollars, whether it's next gen or whether it's something we put together, whatever we come up with, so that we maintain dollars for research and grants and other things, maybe producer payments. Again, that's a point of discussion that we'll be having over the next few years, and how do we utilize those dollars. So I think it's very important we understand how this program worked and the pluses and minuses and what we might do with those dollars as you follow these graphs into the future. Representative Magnus.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and I would point out, too, for some of the newer folks here that the latest plants to come in, Lake Crystal, Granite Falls, Atwater, and the ones that are being built now are basically all using the Job Z program. It was one of the initiatives we put in. And instead of extending the, at a time when the state was strapped for money, instead of extending the ethanol producer incentive payment to those plants, they're all using the Job Z program. Some of it has not been as successful with the Attorney General's ruling, frankly, Mr. Chairman, insisting that they spend millions of dollars more in construction of the plants that weren't favorable to those, and that's a bit of a sore spot to a lot of us, but that goes on. And in one other thing we talked about, Mr. Chairman, in regards to these monies going off, is some of the concerns many of us had, and we talked about it the other night at another meeting I was at, about the access roads into these plants, whether they're state roads or county roads. A lot of them aren't built up to 10-ton specifications, and there's been some talk. You might recall, Mr. Chairman, Mr. Schoenfeld, especially this going around a couple years ago, touting that idea that maybe we'd look at, instead of extending a new set of programs for them for ethanol production, we look at all processing plants, including livestock facilities, and see if we could encourage some funding to enhance the infrastructure development for those facilities.
Thank you, Representative Magnus. I also point out on your graph there that he talked about the deficiency payments, and again, you see those payments go beyond the 10 years. Again, it's important to note to your ethanol producers out there in particular that even though those payments were cut a few years ago, and this committee and others fought mightily not to do that, I might add, but we weren't successful. However, we did agree to pay them in full. And so you see deficiency payments. So instead of 10 years, it might be 11, 12, or 13 years before these plants fully get paid off. And we did that. So, members, I'd also point out that if we put on our thinking caps and try and figure out a way to accelerate perhaps those deficiency payments, that would also free up dollars sooner, 2 or 3 years sooner, that we might be able to utilize in other places. So as we do the budgets, I've asked for some numbers from from our fiscal staff on what present value of these payments might be today. And if we can convince our colleagues in leadership to go along with us, maybe we could have an accelerated payment today on those deficiencies. And rather than wait till 2013 or 14 for dollars, we could move it up about 3 years, which would be interesting concept, I think, too. So a lot of ideas out there, a lot of thought into this. So what else should we know, Mr. Ernst, about this program?
I think you have the basics there, Mr. Chairman.
Pardon me?
I think you have
Okay. Any other questions on the ethanol payment program? Again, you've got the sheet in there, too. As we go through the books, they describe the projects, and I think there's pretty good information there. But we'll be filling in some of the other blanks later. Let's move on then. Call up the next. We got Dairy, Food, and Feed. Kevin Elfring, I believe, is here to entertain us on that division. And again, members, remember what you're seeing here will be is the governor's request. That bill should be in my office today, I hope, talking to the governor's office. So while we haven't seen the specific language, we are getting a presentation, obviously, on the numbers here. And as soon as we get it, I'll have Representative Finstead and anyone else that wants to sign on to that bill with me, we'll hand it in. That'll probably become the basis, you know, for the budget. Obviously, then we'll look at the language and modify where we deem to be fit. But I'll give you people a chance to sign on to that bill if you want before we put it in. Welcome to the committee, Mr. Elfring, and introduce yourself, and get us to your section of the budget and talk about what you, your division does, and budget requests you need and why.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Kevin Elfring. I'm the director of the Dairy and Food Inspection Division. First of all, actually, Mr. Ernest will go over some of the budget dollars. I'll give an overview of all of the program areas, and then I'll discuss also some of the budget change areas as well.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman, the numbers page is page 23 in the budget book. Might want to go back to the narrative after this, but I thought I'd give you a quick overview of what the numbers are. This division relies heavily on the general fund, as you can see, over $6 million per year. And I just wanted to remind you that in the back of the book on page 63, you don't have to necessarily flip to it now, but we do bring in about $3 million a year in general fund revenues. And 90% of that comes from this division, from food inspection and other related activities. So they use a lot of general fund, but they also bring in about half of that.
Mr. Ernest, one of the things we want to work on, too, as we put these budgets together over the next month and a half, the Ag Department members has a lot of fees and fee-driven programs. And I guess what we'd ask for from you, if we don't have it already, is, number one, the fees that are involved with the program, so we understand that. But then number two, do those fees, A, fully fund the program, or are they being supplemented with general fund dollars, or B, the opposite? Are we collecting more than what we actually utilize with our staff and resources, and we actually have an excess of dollars in there? So I think eventually what I'd like to get from you and your finance folks and working with Mr. Reinholtz over there is to put that together so the committee can actually see that line by line, the fees in the department and, you know, expenses, and then we can see if there's a plus or a minus in the last column. Just a very simple layout like that, so we can understand that as we make decisions on those levels and uses of those accounts also.
Sure. Mr. Chairman, I can put together a simplified document for you. There are two main documents that you would have access to also. We do a fund statement on the agricultural fund, and we'll have a new one of those at the end of the month with the February forecast. And then as part of the budget, the Department of Finance does do a departmental earnings report. And that report shows where there are activities that rely on both fees and general fund, for example, like some of the food activities. So it makes a pretty good attempt, but I can try to simplify it. As far as the fee structures, I mean, some of them go on for pages in the statutes. I can't easily summarize every fee, but we can summarize the concept.
Right, and I don't expect that. Just the basic fee, you know, this is a dairy inspection fee that's right. charged to our dairy growers. What's the amount collected, and
yep.
and does it cover the inspectors that are out there for that program, or do you supplement? I mean, if we can see simplified line items like that, again, working with our fiscal staff to put something there, the committee can utilize as a tool here.
Yep, sure. Well, I was just going to point out on page 23 then, especially the line there that you see with $2.7 million a year, the agricultural fund, this division has...
Excuse me, sir. It's Representative Hansen had a question before we get too far here.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and it was on that point. So,
yep.
Just one of the things that I'd like to see is what the agency indirect charges are on these dedicated funds,
mm-hmm.
just what the percent and revenue that's recorded there. So I know that there's the state indirect charge and then the agency indirect charge. Mm-hmm. That would be helpful.
Okay.
Sure. You can provide that as part of that spreadsheet. That'll be helpful.
Okay. The line that says $2.7 million, that there are 8 accounts in the agricultural fund for this division. There's feed regulatory, food handler plan review, commercial canneries, dairy services, consolidated food and egg law, beverage inspection, food handler reinspection, and feed regulatory. The biggest one of those is the dairy services. When Mr. Alpering talks about the activities, he'll talk about why they collect or what they do with each of those fees, I'm sure. And then the federal, we have about 10 different awards from the federal government that make up that $1.3 million a year that this division gets. And there are 5 change items. Mr. Alpering will go over each of those as we work through the document. I guess that's all I wanted to point out to start out with. So,
Mr. Alpering.
Mr. Chairman, I'll kind of go over some of the program areas that we have within the division and kind of give a little bit of a breakdown of what all of these sections do. For example, we'll start out with the commercial feed unit. And the commercial feed regulates the animal feed industry. They have about 1,750 licenses that are issued, and those include pet food manufacturing companies, specialty pet food manufacturers, and also commercial feed blenders. This program conducts routine inspections for things like medicated feed producers. They also do inspections for issues related to bovine spongiform encephalopathy, mad cow disease, looking for any concerns with using prohibited mammalian tissue in certain feed products. Also look at making sure that guaranteed analysis on animal feeds are accurate on the labels. These BSE inspections, or mad cow disease inspections, are, again, looking for prohibited mammalian tissue. There was a ban put in place in 1997 that prohibits the feeding of ruminant materials back to ruminants. The concern, of course, is for mad cow disease, the theory that scrapie infected sheep were rendered and fed to cattle in Great Britain, and after the cattle became infected with BSE, people who consumed some of those meat products came down with a disease called variant Creutzfeldt-Jakob's disease, which is a neurological disease that there is no cure at all. One of the things with the feed program, a very high recognition of compliance with all of these programs, especially related to BSE. Minnesota was one of the first 5 states in the United States to conduct these inspections, even years before the federal government started to conduct them. So they had a very, very active and very successful program. We also did just receive a 2-year grant from the Food and Drug Administration that looks at transportation of these prohibited materials as well. So we'll be conducting about 300-plus inspections of the transportation system to ensure that these prohibited mammalian tissues are being transported properly and labeled properly on farms. The Food Inspection Division, we license and inspect about 8,000 facilities. These are manufacturing plants, wholesale food handlers, retail markets, bakeries, really pretty much every food handler in the state with the exception of restaurants, which are inspected by the state health department. We do routine inspections based on risk. The highest risk products are inspected more frequently. We also do a lot of inspections at manufacturing plants that allows for the free movement of products in interstate commerce. We also issue more than 500 certificates of free sale each year to food manufacturers that allow for the free exportation of Minnesota food products as well. We also respond to emergencies like fires, floods, vehicle accidents, foodborne illness outbreaks. Those happen actually quite often that we have to respond to these types of emergencies. We also have a contract with the Food and Drug Administration where we conduct all of the food inspections or many of the food inspections of manufacturing plants and warehouses and seafood processors under a contract with the FDA. We also delegate some of our retail inspections to some cities and counties, so we provide oversight to those counties and cities and provide training to their inspections so they are consistent with state law and requirements. The dairy inspection program inspects almost 4,600 grade A dairy farms and nearly 600 grade B dairy farms. We issue licenses to 1,500 dairy processors and distributors. Those include out-of-state distributors. Everybody who sells dairy products or fluid dairy products in Minnesota does have to pay a fee, and that goes into that dedicated fund. And part of those fees, of course, are utilized to ensure that products that are coming from other states meet our state requirements as well. We inspect 72 dairy processing plants and again issue more than 500 certificates of free sale for the dairy plants in Minnesota, so those products are freely exported out of the United States as well. Without those certificates, the food and dairy industries would not be able to export the products to those countries that require certificates of free sale. The meat, poultry, and egg inspection program, we have about 350 licensed facilities. We have 75 plants that we call equal to plants. They operate under an equivalency program similar to the United States Department of Agriculture, where in small slaughter plants we conduct antemortem and postmortem inspections. We also inspect about 250 custom meat processing plants that process meat and poultry for owners of the animal. They're exempted from continuous inspection, but we conduct sanitation and labeling inspections at those facilities. These 75 equal two plants have more of an intense inspection program and have really benefited the small meat processors in the state to be able to wholesale meat and poultry products, and also to processors, producers, that are able to do a lot of direct marketing under this state feed inspection program. We also do active surveillance for TSEs, transmissible spongiform encephalopathies, both for chronic wasting disease. All cervidae, such as deer and elk, are tested by our department. We obtain brainstem samples to test for chronic wasting disease in all cervids that are slaughtered in our plants. And we also do testing for bovine spongiform encephalopathy, mad cow disease, for those animals that are showing clinical signs of the disease during these inspections. We also have an active surveillance program for avian influenza. We have some grant money that we receive from USDA APHIS to do surveillance in slaughter plants and live bird markets, doing surveillance for avian influenza as well. We do a lot of collaboration with a lot of multiple agencies. As a matter of fact, one of the questions you had on printing, one of the things that we have really insisted upon is that when we have agencies that have multiple jurisdictions over a particular issue, like avian influenza or bovine tuberculosis, that we're putting out a single message and actually collaborating to make sure that we're not all putting out an informational brochure, and so that the same information is being sent to all the stakeholders. And if there are no questions on that, there is another change items.
Representative Hagerkin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Mr. Alfrey. It wouldn't be right if I let you go without asking a question. But then again, I hope you don't leave. I hope you stay with the department. I know that you've been looking at different options. But with that being said, we got that part in me. You had mentioned earlier that the Department of Health inspects, say, for example, Charlie's Cafe. Why is it that you folks don't, I mean, you do all the inspection up to that point? It only makes sense that you finish. Has it always been within the realm of the Department of Health, the inspection of food places?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Heidgerken, restaurants have always been inspected by the state health department, and I think it kind of fits in well with their programs. These are more food service type of operations. They also inspect nursing homes, school cafeterias, and it really, I think one of the issues comes down to is, can you train people to become experts in every possible area of food safety? And I think one of the things that we've really realized is that you can't build a super inspector. You can't have one of them be able to inspect a low-acid canned food processing plant one day and have the expertise to go into a restaurant the next day and have that same level of expertise.
I realize that, but you would think that with the labs and everything else and some outbreaks that happen, but you would think that the chain of events or it would seem that everything would fit with the Department of Ag, but then again, the Department of Ag may not want to go there. I realize that. But yet, at the same time, I'm always looking at ways in which we can increase the Department of Ag so that we have more clout down here, like at the U.S. level. Mm-hmm. Food stamps, for example, comes through the Department of Agriculture. Mm-hmm. And we had an issue over here a number of years ago when the Animal Board of Health used to be under the auspices of the Department of Ag, and I kind of fought against that when they went off in a separate entity. We need to have as many branches of government oversight that we can possibly get to have clout. But it's something that, just one more question. Are most states operating, Mr. Alpin, as we are when it comes to inspection of grocery stores, nursing homes, schools, and restaurants?
Mr. Alpin. Mr. Chairman, Representative Heitner, it really is going to be kind of across the board. In some states, the Department of Health does all inspections in the state, grocery stores, everything. In some cases, there's only one state where the Department of Agriculture does all inspections, and that's the state of Wyoming. But nearly all of the other states have a Department of Agriculture and Department of Health. Sometimes the Department of Agriculture doesn't have much regulatory authority. They do more with marketing programs. But by and large, most states are structured very similarly to ours.
Representative Heitner. Mr. Chair, food for thought. All right, thank you.
Thank you. Just to be clear now, so you basically inspect farmers markets, you inspect canning plants, factories, those types of things, you inspect meat, butchers shops, and meat processors out in the community.
Yes.
You inspect retail grocery stores.
Yes.
What else am I missing?
Bakeries. Pretty much any food handler, candy manufacturing. So if you were to go into a typical community, we would probably be inspecting the convenience stores that are in the community. We're going to be inspecting the large grocery stores. And one of the things that we look at when we do these inspections is we want to look at the makeup of the operation and see what the risk is associated with what they're doing. If we have a grocery store that all they're selling is prepackaged food products, we're going to put them on a less frequent inspection basis than if they were to have a delicatessen in a full meat department in a bakery, things like that. So we try to make sure that the highest risk processes are inspected more frequently.
Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Alfring, my question is relating to the food processing, and I believe you've been in discussions with the DNR about venison donation program, and this is one of those cross-jurisdictional things, and there will be a bill up next week in Representative Dill's committee. So I wanted to just check that you have been in discussions with the DNR about that program.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Hansen, we have, and as a matter of fact, we did put together a program for venison donation a couple of years ago, where we actually developed an educational brochure in conjunction with the Department of Health and the Department of Natural Resources and a couple of the deer hunting associations on the proper field dressing of deer and how deer hunters would be able to donate those products. One of the things that we have a concern of is that not all deer processors in the state are licensed. If all they're doing is just hunter-harvested deer, they're exempted from licensing because it doesn't really fit into a category as food. We want to make sure that the food that's being processed in these plants going for food shelves are done in licensed facilities
in those that have registered with us, so we can do a little bit more education with them to make sure that only the safest and wholesome product is being sent for donation.
Representative Hansen?
And then to follow up on that, so if we find a source of funding, whether it's a dollar surcharge or whether it's a general fund or whatever, do you feel that you have the capacity to operate the program of inspecting those registered food processing facilities?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Hansen, we already conduct quarterly inspections of these processors. You know, I'm sure that, you know, there probably will be some administrative costs with reimbursing these processors, but there should not be any additional costs associated with inspecting these facilities.
Thank you.
Representative Fowles.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My question goes back to what Representative Heigerkin was talking about. Some convenience stores have significant food service facilities in them, closer to a restaurant probably than a convenience store. Who decides and how is that decision made as to whether they fall under your jurisdiction or the health department's jurisdiction?
Good question. Mr. Chairman, what we do is we look at what the predominant business is, and whatever, if it's 51% food service type of operation, that would be inspected by the health department. If it's 51% grocery, retail type, we would inspect those. And we cross-train our inspectors to be able to do those food service operations. So there's not two agencies going into those facilities, and there's not two licenses being issued either.
Okay. Proceed.
Mr. Chair, if I can bring your attention to page 25 in the book, that is our first change item, and that is a recommendation of implementing an electronic inspection system for dairy inspection, food inspection, and also for the animal feed program. Currently, all of our inspections are done on paper. We handwrite an inspection report in the facility. One of the things that we have a very difficult time is tracking these inspections, making sure that if we do have significant violations, that we're ensuring that inspections or re-inspections are being conducted in these facilities quickly. The other thing is during it for our dairy inspection program, dairy inspectors are still entering in things like somatic cell counts, bacterial counts, in a little notebook that they maintain at their homes. And the Food and Drug Administration, which has oversight over the Grade A milk program in the United States, has continually criticized the state for not having a centralized system of being able to maintain these records. And all these records currently are being maintained in inspectors' homes. Just being able to track all of these things and really coming into the 21st century and being able to do inspections, we'd be able to do the inspection using laptop computers in the firms and be able to issue an inspection report, and those inspections would be entered into the St. Paul office daily or weekly, depending on how we would want to be able to, how quickly we need that data in. And it really will bring us into modern times as far as conducting inspections. And we see that it will really save a lot of staff time as well. All of these inspection reports are physically filed into a filing system, and it would eliminate a lot of that as well.
Mr. Elfring, as to this change item, number one, still trying to picture, you say you're going to use laptop computers. How are you going to move around a large canning factory? You're going to move with your laptop and set it up and punch in things at every stop you make along the way? Or are you still talking about your inspectors handwriting some things and then entering when they get back in their car or their office out there into the laptop? What are you, you know, most of us are... We watch everyone now with the handheld units here at the legislature as well as in doctor's offices and other things. People are entering basically in handheld units right now, but you mentioned laptops. So can you explain a little bit? By the way, and this is nothing against you or anyone else, but I do want to point out to the department, I'm a visual person. And I think a lot of people on this committee are. So I'm going to make a request that as we move through these budget things, a lot more pictures, a lot more stuff on the screen now that it's working. You know, I'd like to see a picture of what you envision for your inspectors. You know, you could flash it up. Even having the list of when you went over what your food department inspects, it would have been nice to read off supermarkets and, you know, maybe a little picture of a store by it. I mean, I know it takes a little preparation, but, you know, members, frankly, this is really kind of dry, boring number stuff, and unless you're really into that kind of thing, I think it'd be very helpful to do a little more 101 with us. And really, and again, not to you, you didn't even know the system was working yet, but for future presentations, RFA is coming up on Tuesday. I hope they can explain their program a little better, maybe with a PowerPoint, maybe with some overheads, and really educate us. It's going to be very hard to give you budget monies that you request unless we really have an understanding of your department, what you're doing. We don't want any mysteries out there. We just want a real understanding, and I think you're doing a good job on most of this, but really help this committee to be your advocate by beefing up your presentation a little bit. That's just my request. Maybe no one else on the committee cares about that, but I do, and I happen to be the chair this year, so that's how that's going to work. But back to your request specifically, again, I'll let you answer now, laptop versus handheld. And
Mr. Chairman, and I pretty much misstated it. We're going to be using a lot more portable equipment. It's I guess my technological skills with computers is just a little bit beyond knowing how to use a keyboard. So I'm probably not going to use the right terminology, but there is a lot of equipment out there that's available. Some of these, and we don't, you know, one of the things in a canning plant, maybe it's not going to be work out the best to be bringing equipment into a facility like that, but in a retail store, it certainly will work out much better in a lot of these other facilities.
So you are bringing handheld type equipment, other things. I guess I'd like to kind of have an understanding of what that equipment is. That's not really here. It just says you're going to an electronic system. So I guess I'd like to understand better what you are talking about as far as the electronics go. Secondly, your request is $346,000 the first year and then $205,000 each year for out to the next 4 years. I guess I understand a one-time cost for equipment. What's the ongoing cost for? Is that for maintenance, reprogramming? What's the breakdown of that ongoing cost that you've got out into the future as far as the tails go?
Mr. Chairman, the initial cost, the higher cost, of course, of the first is for equipment. In the outgoing years would be for maintenance, and we're actually exploring a couple of different systems. One that would be developed by having someone in the department that's going to be able to maintain all of this data in the future. And another is there are some companies out there that have developed software for inspection programs, both for the retail food store code and for the pasteurized milk ordinance. But that would be done based on an internet system, and there would be some costs in maintaining that system as well.
And Mr. Elfring and Mr. Ernest, I'd like to, again, as we go through, particularly with technology, this came up the other day in Finance Committee, and I'm just curious to know, again, a breakdown of that maintenance cost. Is that a contract to an outside consultant? Do you have your own IT people at the Department of Agriculture, or do you contract over with the Department of Finance or some other state agency to do your work? Who's that money going to? What part of it is for hardware maintenance? What part of it is for software upgrades? Again, just trying to get a handle, not only on you, but statewide, how we're handling. There's a huge, this is probably part of it, but there's a huge IT request from the governor this year to do a number of things. And I think we need to better understand, again, $205,000, if we're paying a company to keep our machines and everything upgraded and running, you know, we could probably hire an IT person for half that to maintain your entire department. But I assume you have someone who does your maintenance now or your contracting or something. So a little better understanding of those numbers in this change item would be extremely helpful to me, at least.
Mr. Chairman?
Mr. Ernest.
I don't have all the detail in front of me today, but I would just say some of the long-term agreements would be like software and data licensing, just like you would for your computer, upkeep your Word program updated and things like that. And I also just wanted to say that this request was reviewed thoroughly by the Office of Enterprise Technology, OET, and they told us they thought we had a really good proposal. So I'm sure if you want them to speak to how it fits into the bigger things, we probably could get someone to...
And Ms. Ernst, who maintains and your IT equipment now over in the department? Do you have staff on staff with the Department of Ag or shared with health or something else, or are you contracting over with the finance department and their IT office?
Mr. Chairman, we do have our own IT department. We do share some things with the Department of Health because they're in our building. And then, of course, for the statewide systems like the accounting system, the Department of Finance and OET, Department of Administration are involved in those.
And I assume those costs are somewhere here on this other operating expense sheet that we got. Do you know what, well, we can go over that later. Tech services maybe, agency provided professional tech services, is that where that would fall or where does...
Mr. Chairman, most of what we would pay OET or admin or finance would be in the statewide indirects.
Okay.
So,
which again, maybe as we get into it further, I'll think about it. But as we look at, if we're using the sheets they just gave us, members, the first sheet of that multi-sheet packet, in part includes this. It's protection services, and again, there's other things in here that we don't quite understand yet, I don't think. Other operating costs. We have other operating expenses, and under that we have other operating costs. Now, isn't that interesting? That's a real easy way to track what this money's used for when you just keep going other as you go down. So, perhaps, and it's a big cost, $3 million, $3.8. Actually, it goes up and down, which is interesting in itself as I look across there. But perhaps in the future, some... we may need a little more breakdown of some of these line items, too, and hopefully over the next few weeks you can help provide some of that. You do have the statewide indirect, the agency indirect. Again, the agency indirect, fairly large numbers as far as the budget goes, and as well as professional technical services outside vendors. Not exactly sure, Mr. Elfring or Ernest, what that is under protection services, a big number again. Again, just trying to get a handle on this and really explain what your budgets are up to here and where we're spending our resources. So just some comments there.
Sure.
And hopefully we can keep moving on that. All right. Continue, Mr. Elfring.
Mr. Chairman, the next change item is on page 27. Mr. Chairman, one of the things that we have really been doing a lot, we've always responded to emergency situations, but in the last number of years, we've seen a significant increase in emergency operations and planning for emergencies. We have a lot of mandates from the federal government to conduct education with food processors, with dairy processors, on issues related to bioterrorism, working with Homeland Security and ensuring that the food supply is safeguarded in the state. But we also have a lot of things that we work with other agencies, for example, issues with animal diseases such as bovine tuberculosis and avian influenza. As a matter of fact, one of our veterinarians was the incident commander. We set up the incident command system with the Board of Animal Health to do the work with the bovine tuberculosis investigation in the northern part of the state. We hired a person a couple of years ago that was actually that person is a veterinarian and also an epidemiologist, and looking at being able to coordinate some of our routine work as well as doing foodborne illnesses. But that position has evolved to the point where it is 100% emergency planning. And as a matter of fact, we have additional people working on emergency planning just because of the additional work that we have daily related to emergency situations. Right now, currently, we're funding that position with food inspection funding, and it's taking the person out of the field. We need to have inspection personnel because we're not currently meeting the frequency of inspection, especially in our high-risk establishments, and we need to make sure that that funding is going back to the food inspection program where it really needs to be.
Okay, any questions? Representative Doherty.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Director Elfring, I have noticed here the discussion about prepared for emergencies, avian flu especially. Do you have any idea what it would actually take to, if we do have an epidemic statewide to deal with, how many people it would actually take to track this? Does DHS have anything that tell you guys how many inspectors you would need to track that or anything like that?
Mr. Elfring,
Chairman, Representative Doherty, we don't. I don't have anything like that. But I think one of the things and some of the things that we have to be preparing for too is just the identification of if we were to have a human influenza pandemic, just what type of a workforce we'd have out there, even from our own staff. And certainly business is going to have to continue. I don't know if there's any good figures out there. I know that there's a lot of discussion about avian influenza and the potential threat. We do a lot of surveillance right now and with the poultry industry and in live bird markets. The human issues really are going to be more with the health department and the work that they're doing.
Would you characterize then the situation as there's no way to check once this starts?
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Elfring, Representative Doherty, I don't think there's any way. One thing is, you know, there's a lot of discussion about high path avian influenza that there's some experts out there that have said that this is very likely going to mutate into the next human influenza pandemic. Well, if you look at the 1918 influenza pandemic, 60 million people died worldwide. I don't think there's any way of knowing the pathogenicity of an influenza, if it would mutate into a human strain, whether it would ever elevate to pandemic conditions. The seasonal flu that we have right now could mutate into the next pandemic. So I don't think that there are any real good predictors out there.
Representative Doherty.
One last question. There is no budget allocation to deal with the increased inspections. Is that correct?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Doherty, no, there are no increase for increased inspections at all.
Thank you.
Mr. Elfring, you also, I see in your background, you talk about avian influenza, bovine TB. Some of these things are animal related. How is this in new position, is this going to be in coordination with the Animal Board of Health? Seems that's what their charge is with the, particularly the livestock, obviously. I understand if you're doing food, hopefully not, this isn't just focused on pickles, right? I just had to throw that out.
Mr. Chairman, we have been really watching them very closely.
I'm sure you have. But so I understand the food things, but how does this, in all seriousness, how does this correlate with the Animal Board of Health and why the position here rather than there? Can you kind of expound on that a little bit?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, and I guess I like to look at it. First of all, is bovine tuberculosis, is it a livestock disease issue or is it an agriculture issue? And I look at it as more than just as an animal disease issue. Number one, bovine tuberculosis, if not controlled, can actually cause illness in humans who are in meat processing, in dairy processing. One of the things that we have done with the Board of Animal Health is a lot of these efforts are very much coordinated. Like I had said earlier, when we set up the incident command system to kind of oversee the whole bovine tuberculosis issue, the Board of Animal Health quickly realized that they needed to have their district veterinarians out in the field and doing testing for bovine tuberculosis rather than trying to manage this whole emergency. And we have a person who has been trained in conducting these emergency operations, and she was actually the one working in conjunction with the Board of Animal Health. The same with avian influenza. It really is an agriculture issue more than just a poultry disease. We work with the Board of Animal Health, for example, in doing surveillance for avian influenza in these live bird markets and small slaughter plants because we have the jurisdiction over them. We really coordinate all of our efforts with them. Even though this position would be housed within the Department of Agriculture, it's really going to cross areas in areas of expertise. And that's one of the reasons why we hired a veterinarian, because of being able to have those cross disciplines. And she also has a master's degree in public health, so it really fits in quite well with coordinating our efforts not only with the Board of Animal Health, but with also DNR and the Department of Health as well, and Homeland Security.
Okay. Proceed.
Mr. Chair, the next change item is on page 28. And this is in relationship to the state meat and poultry inspection program. The meat inspection program was actually funded initially back in 1998. It was an initiative really looking at small meat processors that would be able to have an inspection program so that animals that they were slaughtering and processing in their plants, they would be able to sell wholesale. At that time, only animals that were inspected under the USDA system were allowed to be able to be sold. The USDA really encouraged states that did not have a state meat inspection program to implement one because they believed that that state's expertise was much more in tune with working with these small and very small processors. This has been a very successful program. We currently have 75 plants that are operating under continuous inspection. These plants are selling wholesale products to restaurants, to other grocery stores. Matter of fact, we have one facility in the central part of the state that is a swine producer. It has a farrow to finish operation, has a small slaughter processing plant. He and his family operate that plant, and he sells wholesale to 15 different grocery stores all of the pork products that he raises and produces. It's become a very successful program for especially direct marketers. One of the things is we have to provide continuous inspection in these facilities. And during our recent review with the United States Department of Agriculture, they provide oversight, and they actually provide 50% of the funding of this program. They said that we need to increase the inspection frequency of those plants that are doing daily processing to be able to make sure that we're meeting our equal two status with USDA. If we're not able to meet that equal two status, we would be putting in jeopardy the state meat inspection program, and which would really be a terrible blow to all the small meat processors that are out there right now operating under this system. This would provide funding for one additional inspector, and that would be able to fulfill our requirements to provide daily inspection in these plants.
Thank you. I see on your description item, I have a question relationship to base budget. You say now the current budget is reimbursed 50% by the federal government, which comes back into your general fund. However, you're not doing that with this new position, not knowing yet whether you'll get reimbursed. Do you have to apply for that reimbursement? How do you know? I obviously understand that the budgets are still being written in Washington, but looks like confidently you're reimbursed 50% here. Why wouldn't you be confident you'd be reimbursed for this position also?
Mr. Chairman, every year we have to provide a budget to USDA, and that budget has to be submitted to them by October 1st. If this is a position that we need to have funded now, we wouldn't be able to start being reimbursed from USDA until next October. That's when we would submit this position in addition to the ones that we already are being reimbursed for.
And just a note to our crack staff down there at the end of the table, we want to make sure we put language in the bill that if and when that money is reimbursed to us right in the middle of our biennium, that does fall back into the general fund, and we'd actually then have a, if this is funded, we'd have a $46,000 plus on this position at that point. So, well, we should put some language in the bill ultimately to instruct that to happen when and if you get reimbursed for it.
Yes.
Okay. Representative Magnus.
On this, Mr. Chairman and Mr. Elfring, on this meat inspection program again, are local, are small processing plants able to process animals that are lame or have a broken leg or whatever? Has that issue been straightened out? Or maybe another testifier later on can talk about that when we do the animal health stuff. But what's the situation with that?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Magnus, because we operate under the oversight of USDA, USDA has made a decision that all non-ambulatory cattle, for any reason, if it would be for a broken leg or a prolapsed uterus or anything, cannot be slaughtered. Even slaughtered in these custom processing plants where the meat would only go back to the owner of the animal. A couple of years ago, I tried to get a little inventive and decided that in Minnesota, we would allow these animals to be slaughtered in custom processing plants if the animal was accompanied by a certificate from a practicing veterinarian that it was a broken leg or something that was obvious. And USDA very quickly sent us a letter that said if we did not rescind our policy that we would be jeopardizing our Equal 2 status. So currently all non-ambulatory livestock in Minnesota cannot be slaughtered for any meat processing.
Mr. Elfring, for meat processing for sale, can they be slaughtered and used personally?
Mr. Chairman, no. And USDA has made a decision, and I don't necessarily agree with their decision. I've argued this. As a matter of fact, I'm on the National Advisory Committee for Meat and Poultry Inspection, and I brought this up at our last meeting that there's been an updated Harvard risk assessment on the concerns for mad cow disease in the United States that it's so insignificant, and I discussed this with the Undersecretary of Agriculture and the Administrator of Food Safety Inspection Service of whether or not that would be rescinded, and they said that it would not be.
Are all of our butchering operations USDA approved, or is it only in USDA facilities?
Mr. Chairman, all of the facilities in Minnesota are really under the oversight of USDA. All meat and poultry inspection in the United States has to be under the oversight of USDA. They have identified certain states, and there's 28 states that have meat inspection programs. They delegate that authority to the state programs, but we really have to be almost a mirror image of USDA in order to maintain that.
Mr. Elfring, when I used to be a more aggressive and enthusiastic deer hunter, our group would harvest the deer during the hunting season, then we would butcher them at home for the most part, cut our own steaks, do our own chops, that type of thing, but then we would bring in scraps and other things to our local butcher, and they would process sausage and other meat products from that. Could a farmer do the same thing with a cow with a broken leg?
Mr. Chairman, I've asked the exact same question of USDA, and USDA has said that if a farmer slaughters their own animal on their own premises and delivers the carcass or any parts of that carcass to a processing plant and tells the processor that this was an ambulatory animal, that it could walk, that plant can process that meat.
But is that a form? Do they say, did your cow walk up to the barn before you shot it? Or
Mr. Chairman, it's not real clear what they really want. The only thing is the processing plant will have to have in their records that this animal was brought in, that it was from an ambulatory animal.
So, again, and I understand what you're saying, and I'm not asking anyone to do anything illegal, but frankly, if a farmer would quarter up an animal and bring it in, there's really no way, you know, as long as a farmer, obviously for his own use, so he knows the meat is healthy, he's prepared to eat it. There's no way to really track that type of a
Mr. Chairman, no, not really, unless the plant operator would have a certain obligation if they would see that there's an obvious broken leg or something like that. Yeah, again, Mr. Chairman, I don't agree with USDA's decision, and we have actually tried to come up with some methods to remedy that, but have not been real successful.
Okay. Continue.
Mr. Chairman, the next change item is on page 29. And this kind of goes in conjunction with some of your previous questions on the relationships with the Board of Animal Health. In the last couple of years, the Board of Animal Health has received some funding from USDA Animal and Plant Health Inspection Service to implement a national animal premise identification and animal ID system. And they hired a person a couple of years ago. That person has since left the board. And we met with the Board of Animal Health because this, again, is so much of an agriculture issue rather than just an animal issue that we have, with some of that federal funding, we have hired a person that is currently coordinating or doing some of the coordinating with premise identification and also working with the National Animal Identification System. The concern, though, is that federal funding is not going to be continued. As a matter of fact, the National Animal Identification System is, right now, there's a lot of questions on how that is going to proceed. We in the state really feel that we need to have a system of identifying premises, especially for issues related to livestock diseases, so that we're able to be able to quickly investigate and be able to hopefully stop the spread of some of these diseases. This person, again, would be working with the Board of Animal Health and the Department of Agriculture, but would be housed with the Department of Agriculture for only reasons that because it really is, it kind of envelops more of a bigger issue than just livestock disease. They would be working with producers and doing outreach and really trying to encourage people to register their premises with the state. We don't want information on how many animals they have, but we just want to know where these premises are, the types of livestock that they have, because if we do have an outbreak of avian influenza, we want to know where the poultry is being produced. If they have cattle, it's not going to become an issue. The farmer is going to maintain records and hopefully make those available, but all we need to know right now is where cattle are being, what premises they're on, or all livestock.
Mr. Elfrin, can you give me an idea? I'm looking at your last three requests, $120,000 for this person, $90,000 for this person, $141,000. Can you give me their base salaries on those three? What, they're all different, and I assume you've either hired some of these people already or you're in the process of hiring. One of them you mentioned, I believe the $120,000 on the emergency plan, that's a veterinarian.
Mr. Chairman, yes, that's correct.
And what would the base salary be on that?
Mr. Chairman, I don't have that information right now. We can certainly get that for you, though.
Okay, I'm just curious on the discrepancy in numbers. If we got base salaries, that help, too, there. Do you know the meat inspector base salary?
I don't know that right offhand, okay. Mr. Chair, but we can get that as well. And we can get all of these.
Okay. And again, the premise ID and record keeping, what part of that is salary in this request? And what part would be other, you know, I don't know that that's all salary. I assume you're not paying this person more than you're paying a veterinarian, so obviously there's other costs involved in that request, too.
Yes, Mr.
Whether
Chairman.
Whether it's equipment or, you know, software, or I'm not sure what. So if we get a little breakdown on what that is, it's helpful to know the salaries of these folks that are being hired and understand why a veterinarian salary would be different than a meat inspection person, an animal science degree person, or whatever it is. So, and one last change item, small one here.
Mr. Carey, the final one is on page 30. Presently, retail food establishments that have new construction, if they're building a new facility or if they're doing significant remodeling to a facility, are required to submit blueprints or some type of a plan review into the department. We do a review of that plan and make sure that equipment is placed properly, making sure that all the equipment is there that needs to be there. For example, we have had one particular facility that opened up their store and put together a full delicatessen and didn't put in a hand wash sink. So one of the reasons that we want to be able to review these plans is make sure that all these things are put in place. And it really has become a benefit to the industry to have these plans reviewed before construction starts. Very much a fee-for-service type of service that we provide, and this has been had a shortfall in this fund over the last number of years, and this would give a small increase to that program, and some of it would be supplemented also because the person who's working in that program does other type of work for the division in addition to doing these plan reviews.
Okay. Any questions, members? All right. I think we're going to quit there for today, members. And again, thank Mr. Bozicki and others for being on board. Next week we'll do the RFA overview as well as the RFA bill that we need to move forward. And then we will continue down the road of these budget presentations, and we're expecting big things next week from our presenters. Again, no deference to you, Mr. Elfring or Mr. Ernst, but the creativity coming from the department will be duly noted from here on forth. So thank you for that. Members, if there's no questions, we're adjourned.